Vegas. The contest format is available at losalamitos.com. Plus, our day and night weekend doubleheaders also return as our live quarter horse and thoroughbred nighttime action will follow the daytime cards. Watch all the action on TVG or at your favorite satellite facility or ADW provider. The LA County Fair meet at Los Alamitos Racecourse. 9 days of great racing. Opening day is Saturday, June 25th. For more, visit losalamitos.com.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standard bred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet to detect gene doping in thoroughbreds. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
At the races with Steve Pick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Pick.
We're back. Hour two, about, it says what, eight minutes into hour two. And we're going to be joined by Mike Tomlinson momentarily, then Ron Moquette and Chuck Simon. And then in the second half of the hour, and probably a little bit into hour three as well, Dick Powell, Kevin Gorg as well. And then we'll do some recapping, and that'll include even the Belmont recap, because Todd Pletcher last week was away with family, so we get Todd in to do his Belmont recap, and that will be the fourth one over the years that we've had with him. So looking forward to Todd, and actually the mind control ahead of Mike Tomlinson joining us. There's some interesting stuff out of the mind control Hot Rod Charlie race, and that includes Hot Rod Charlie pointing for the Whitney. And I saw that Doug O'Neill had one comment to Dave Grenig. He said he thought maybe, and he brings up a fair point, the mile, that this, the mile is a little sharp for Hot Rod Charlie, and more in the, mind control 7 furlongs to the mile, as opposed to Hot Rod Charlie, kind of the mile in a, and an eighth, or, cutting back. I'm still working through, essentially getting utzed out of 2,500 on Saturday. Mike Tomlinson joins us, and we continue our series of discussions with the horseman from Kentucky who sat in and participated in the HISA meeting with Lisa Lazarus yesterday. And her job is unenviable, obviously, and the industry kind of counting on her and Charlie Sheeler to make this happen in a way that benefits everyone. Mike, first of all, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Mike, you had some things to say. Let me get your take on what's happening and what your concerns were that were brought out yesterday.
Well, let me start with, I don't think there's too many horsemen who disagree with the fact that we needed uniform medication rules and uniform, punishment and to follow through with those rules. We did not need a government overreach in here and telling horsemen how to train their horses.
And that's a different take on it. In what way, Mike, do you sense that these rules that have been approved by the FTC and are going to be used as the framework, how does it manifest itself in terms of that influence?
Well, there are many very good therapeutic things that we can do to these horses to make them run up to their potential. They are nowhere close to performance-enhancing drugs or performance-enhancing therapy. For example, there is no magnetic therapy, MagnaWave therapy on a horse 48 hours before you even do a timed workout on this horse. For those who don't know, MagnaWave is a magnetic therapy that when you go to the chiropractor, for those who have done that, and they put the little electromagnetic machine on you, a lot like a TENS machine, that helps relax the muscles, increases the blood flow, and relieves muscle soreness, you're not performance enhancing. You're just simply allowing that horse to perform at a level that he's capable of. Yeah. And they are telling horsemen all over the United States when we cannot use this therapy, and taking away the ability to do it when it needs it.
This is an interesting take, and it's one of the reasons that at first I thought, we'll just go through the reporting on what transpired, and then I realized as I read everybody's comments, Mike, that every horseman essentially had a different specific area of concern that is troubling to them, and whether it's the registration, whether it's the way in which they'll be the possibility of answering, potential violations when they arise, because, they are going to arise. Michelle just mentioned some of that. Jason Barkley and Moquette will have his own view additionally. So that's one of the reasons I wanted to get kind of a little bit of a scattershot sampling of opinions, because it seems that everybody has something about this that is either bothering them as a horseman or is bothering potentially their owners, and you're voicing those. I mean, what have your owners had to say about it?
Well, I've got owners that are threatening to quit. I've got owners who have joined right in and signed up and are going along with it, whether they like it or not. The problem, as in most situations where the government gets involved, is the tail is wagging the dog here. We've got people who have no clue what they're talking about or what they're doing who are setting the rules. There is not a trainer that has been in this business for more than a year that has not had the occasion to rise to three-quarter a shoe on a horse. The rules clearly state that they only allow full-rim shoes. Well, if you get a horse with a sore quarter, he's getting ready to blow a quarter crack, you need to do three-quarter a shoe to relieve the pressure on that heel to prevent that. From now on, there is no three-quartering of a shoe if that rule stays in place. They are taking away so many good tools for horsemen that it's going to decrease the population of horses running. We're already struggling to get horses in, not because the races are overfilling, because your races will not go. So when you add these new implementations in here and the new rules that they are implementing, you're going to decrease the population of horses running even further. And as we progress into this thing and the end goal, part of the end goal is to totally eliminate Lasix also, good luck, because 75% of these horses will bleed. And you're talking about a extreme drop in the population of horses who are going to be able to participate in racing.
On that topic, I mean, even well in advance of this, Mike, when it comes specifically to the Lasix and bleeding issue, you know, there's people listening saying, "Oh, that's good. Let's get them out of circulation." One of the things about it, though, that essentially it benefits are people, you know, are people that can just take a horse and they can put him on the shelf for 9 months. Also benefits, you know, people that if it turns out they've got a horse that is a repeat bleeder and has to be retired, it basically plays into the hands of the people that are the wealthiest. This has been a steady drumbeat and a steady set of posturing that is so obvious that trying to essentially push out a certain segment of owner and a certain segment of participant in the industry by creating a framework that makes it impossible for people to, I don't want to say even compete financially, participate financially.
Well, I agree 100%, Steve. The powers that be in this business have wanted the European model of racing for a long time. They only want the aristocrats in the game and the common person that can afford to own half a horse, and be a participant on a low level. The trainers that work for those guys, those are the people that are going to be pushed out of the game. For the past 10 or 15 years, all I have heard is the perception of racing, the public perception of racing, and they have blamed it on Lasix. Lasix is not the issue, and I hate to keep coming back to just Lasix, but part of this began with the Jockey Club trying to eliminate Lasix in United States racing. The perception of racing has not been Lasix. It has been the human flaw that makes all of us want to win at any cost. Now, some guys yield to that, and some guys have been able to fight it off and have a pretty clean record. But the perception of racing is not the medication problems. It's the fact that guys have continually cheated and got away with it. Even when they get caught, they get a slap on the wrist, and then 6 months they're back doing the same thing and rocking and rolling. And along the other line, and now we've got the whip rule, you can't hit a horse more than six times. What is going to be the perception of the handicapper who is watching a race and the jockey can't persevere to the wire because he's hitting six times and the horse gets beat ahead or a half length and the rider has not persevered to the wire because of this new rule? You know, it seems to me like the perception of racing is going to suffer dramatically because of the new rules, and I'm sure they were well-intentioned, but because we have the tail wagging the dog, we've got people making these rules that have no idea what they're doing.
You know, when you talk about that discussion point, Mike, I'm smiling. People can hear, you know, probably hear the smile in my voice. We heard this exact same refrain about steroids. Oh, if we eliminate steroids, oh, the players, the horse players, they're not betting, and there's this terrible perception, and if we get rid of steroids, players will come rushing back. which, of course, proved to be a complete lie. Nobody cared. Absolutely nobody cared about steroids in racehorses until suddenly they did. And, okay, it took 18, and even there, it's even a success story, because when everybody made up their mind, you know, do we really need steroids? You know what? We don't. Okay, so within 18 months, essentially, the entire industry, the model rules program from RMTC and RCI, that we eliminated steroids in short order. This is very different, and yet we're hearing the same story. Oh, people, if we get rid of Lasix, handle grow. People just don't want horses getting. Nobody cares. And in fact, we've created even a bigger problem because of the on Lasix, off Lasix, on Lasix, off Lasix. So that's a whole area where we've already had a roadmap that basically answered, you know, that fallacy.
Well, you know, about 10 years or so ago, the Jockey Club was trying to, disprove the fact that Lasix was, a good product as far as therapeutic and allowed horses to run up to the potential. So they did a study in South Africa, and it proved to the contrary what they wanted. So that study was swept under the rug. It never saw the light of day. There's been a lot of things been disheartening in this whole thing, and the perception of racing is the excuse we hear all the time, and they used to fine jocks for not persevering to the wire, and now we're going to fine them for not riding to the, for trying to ride to the wire. So it's such a, and the perception, what is the perception going to be when these horses start bleeding and run much more inconsistently than they would be otherwise? So the perception for those handicappers is going to take a turn for the worse because there's no consistency in these horses. But it's really a convoluted mess we've developed here, and I'm very disappointed in the way things are going. You know, I just four uniform rules and uniform punishment and enforcement. That way that the guys that have been cheating are found out and penalized and out of the game. There needs to be a three-strike rule. If you get three strikes in 1 year, you're not penalized, you're out. Because there are guys still playing our game that have continually violated the rules, and they're still just rolling right along.
Still operating.
That would help tremendously.
Michael Tomlinson, everybody. And Mike, as I'm doing with all the horsemen this morning, there's some horses to talk about with each of you because you've all had some recent success. And for those that did not see Conaher a couple of weeks ago, actually it's now 3 weeks ago on Friday, June 3rd. If you didn't see Conaher's performance, you need to pull it up and see the replay. Mike, very interested to hear what's next for Patricia Hopes, Conaher, the Jimmy Creed colt, the three-year-old that we don't know what he might be.
Well, he's a very nice colt. At this point in time, we have narrowed it down to two options. We're either going to stay here for an overnight handicap on the 3rd of July. There's $160,000 overnight stake. Or we may go to the Iowa Derby. We're very interested in testing him two turns. We can go to Iowa and still run on Lasix. Here we come back to the Lasix issue, and I can protect my horse trying something new for the first time with Lasix. It is not a graded stake, but the money is just as good as several other graded stakes that's around the country. So eventually, we're probably looking at the Jerkins or something like that down the road here. And we're going to have to go off of Lasix. There's no doubt about it. And we're going to do what is good for the horse. But at this point in time, that's our options for him. We're going to narrow it down here in the next week, which race we're going to use. And I can tell you he's doing very well, and everything's on target for him.
This is a horse that the last pair, triple-digit buyers and just eye-dropping performances. He's also a great story, Mike. Was a $9,000 purchase?
He was a $9,000 purchase by Bobby McCutcheon. I've known Bobby and his son Jason for several years, and I got word from them that they thought they had a nice colt, and they that's their business. They buy yearlings, develop them, run them once or twice, and sell them. So they give me a call, and we bought this horse for two of my very good clients, Mark Farrow and his wife Diana from Oklahoma, bought half, and Benny Fogley of Patricia's Hope bought the other half. We brought him over to Churchill. We ran him here in Keeneland. He was on the board both times. We broke his maiden at Colonial on the grass, and then we put him away for the fall and the winter and brought him back this spring, and he's just come back with a vengeance.
Big time. In terms of the stretch out, in terms of the stretch out, because that's interesting when you bring up the Jerkins, you could run in a race, like you mentioned, and then cut him back to the 7/8, which could be a very powerful 1-2 punch, actually.
Well, it's a good angle, his female side of the family is all ran two turns. Now, the Jimmy Creed You know, the sire is known for more of a sprint sire, but he could run a mile, and this horse's first and second dam both run two turns, so we're thinking the way he run seven furlongs the other day that, you know, another eighth of a mile or so is not going to be much of a stretch for him.
That that dam you mentioned, you should be here, and a Niagara's Causeway that you don't see on that line very much. There happens to be a magician filly that was ahead of her, ahead of him, and she's a winner as well. And there's a Street Boss. She's not showing anything after 2020, but Conaher is a colt. He's exciting, and right now, our friend Lee Einsiedler, he's got the best Jimmy Creed going when it comes to Casa Creed, but it feels like Conaher might be the next best Jimmy Creed. Mike, always a pleasure, and I'm rooting for you, and anxious to call you after his next win.
Well, we'll be talking to you, and feel free to check in, and we'll give you a report.
I love it. Mike Tomlinson, everybody, and also see another great angle, you know, talking about some of the, you know, a real nuance. I mean, who else have you seen anybody else discuss the rules that would limit the ability to put corrective shoes or, you know, anything other than, you know, than the most basic racing plate on a horse? And so I appreciate Mike bringing that up. Jason Barkley, Michelle Lovell, Mike Tomlinson, Ron McQuett is going to join us next, and then Chuck Simon. So we'll press forward with this, talking about yesterday's HISA meeting, and tomorrow we'll be joined by Eric Hamelbeck. You'll get the national HBPA viewpoint with where things stand right now, and you know, the topic that Eric brought up here in advance of Ron joining us. Eric talked about you know, the off the racetrack, the you know, responsible party, the covered person aspect. You know, what happens when you turn your horse out, and or you send your horse you know, for 6-8 weeks for, you know, for a turnout, and you know, who's the, not everybody that's going to be handling the horse there is a covered person. What happens if they come back and you know, there's something that you know, whether it's a contaminant or, you know, whether it's a medication. I mean, there's so many parts of this that, you know, everybody's got their own individual viewpoint. So unique opportunity this morning to get a survey, you know, from a parade here of interested parties. And Ron McQuett had a great tweet yesterday. He said that HISA, if HISA is jogging for the vet on the, you know, down the road, would be put on the vet's list. Ron, good morning.
good morning. How are you?
I'm good. And leave it to you to put it in folksy terms.
Well, I mean, one of the things that I've realized in dealing with this is that the people I relate to a lot of times think more like I do than they think like the professional polished speakers that are on the other side. So it's better for me to try to figure out a way that I can relate to the people that I need to, instead of hoping that everybody thinks it's correct English or whatever, you know.
Well, give us your take on what was presented yesterday, what your specific concerns, and what it is that you're alarmed about, you know, depending on your level of alarm.
Well, there's two or three things. One is that it's the obvious ill preparation, I guess you could say, of people that are tasked with a job that they're just ill-equipped to do correctly. And the other thing that struck me as so weird and alarming over the last 2 weeks, you know, being a board member of the HPBA, we've been fighting this for a while. So yesterday, I've heard all these questions they ask, and I've heard all the answers before. So that part wasn't anything new. But one of the things that I've realized and is so alarming is the misconception that people have, general people that love horse racing but aren't as involved as some of us day to day. And that's the part that is so scary to me, because they've been allowed, the people that pushed for HISA have been allowed through, you know, a marketing campaign to build a perception that the horse owners and trainers that are affected the most are not okay with any kind of change. We don't care about horses. And, you know, that's just not true. And it's a narrative that's been allowed to be pushed while a lot of good people that don't know how to respond to such idiocy, you know, obvious misstatements. And, you know, we're not professional speakers. We're not professional writers. They have on their side, and I hate that we're drawn up in sides, but they have on their sides, you know, a team of marketing people. They have professional writers, and they can wheel around any sentence that you use against you. And we're just people that are, at the end of the day, tired. We change so many things. We're willing to change. We're willing to do with unified testing. We're willing to do with anything that helps a horse. If you tell me it's going to help a horse, I promise you horsemen will get behind you on it. The quickest rules that we've ever had implemented have been those that are there specifically to protect the horse. But it's amazing to me how many people on the outside that may have an interest don't understand the plight that we're going through and understand the real problem. This isn't about medication reform. This isn't about unification of rules. This isn't about integrity. This is about control. And it's become painfully obvious whenever I go to all these meetings that we're going to lose control of a sport that means everything to us and is also ran in the thoughts of the people that are going to run it. That's dangerous to me for someone who's devoted their life to getting where I'm at in this sport and to hopefully improving the breed, improving the overall opinion of people that do our job. I'm a little concerned that we've lost the narrative, and it's been because we've been too tired to fight or too ill-equipped or too stubborn to hire someone to represent us. And I think it's time that people understand that, you know, if Congress doesn't delay this, which needs to happen just out of common sense, which I know common sense isn't employed much in our industry, but just out of common sense, they ought to look at it and go, look, these people aren't ready for this. I mean, if this was a McDonald's, they're only selling, you know, fries and nuggets. They can't even make a burger, you know. They shouldn't open. And Congress should push this back. And in the meantime, we do a full court press of trying to initiate what we want to unify the rules, to implement changes that will protect the horses and not be the gotcha model that is scaring so many of our people in an already struggling title of being a trainer out of the game. We don't need a European aristocratic model. We need the 10 horse outfits. We need the 20 horse outfits that you know come in and ship into Saratoga. We don't need the third generational people controlling every aspect of our sport, because they don't like us. It's proven by the rules they make and who they impose them on, and who they more apparently who they don't mess with.
Well, that's a whole separate topic. In fact, I think when Chuck joins us next, I know one of the areas that he's mentioned is how you know, even though there's been assurances from the current set of management in involved with HISA, there's no guarantee that, you know, long term that this won't be wielded, you know, vindictively. There's a very glaring example of a horseman that's been sidelined for close to a decade that was essentially absolutely set on from a vindictiveness aspect by the New York Racing and Wagering Board at the time. So we've got a template actually for, you know, for that kind of an approach, where you know, a variety of you know, non-specific charges were enough to, you know, to put Rick Dutrow out of the game for 10 years, and if people don't believe that was a manhunt essentially, an industry lynching, then you weren't paying attention, and that. You know, that kind of hangs over things to me as you, you know, talk on that topic. And I know Chuck will bring this up, so I'll leave it to him. You've got an interesting cross section of owners too, Ron, and I'm curious what your owners, you know, the questions they've asked you, and you know, how many of them, you know, you've had to go and get answered. What, you know, talk about the topics that have come forward from the owner's side.
Well, I can tell you this. First off, instead of the differences, though, they come from all different walks. I mean, I've got, you know, a couple billionaires. I've got some people that have bought into their first horse for, you know, $2,000 partnership. But they all have one thing in common. They want what's best for horses, and they want what's best for horse racing. I won't work for anybody that I believe is willing to risk a horse for a profit and or doesn't have the overall welfare of the horse primary. And I'm happy that I've worked long enough to get to a point to where that is a big portion of my thought process of whenever I go to work for someone. But I'm lucky enough to work for people that are on different commissions, different boards, and, you know, we don't always agree on policy. We don't always agree on which regulation, but we always agree on doing what's right for the horse. And, you know, that's the strength of our relationship. And it's, hey, we're going to do what we think is right, and you can agree how to get there this way, and I can disagree on that and think it's this way. But, you know, I respect everyone and their opinion. I just wish that people were more enlightened or educated with some of the facts before they're placed into power. And it has nothing to do with my owners. It has to do with the average perception of the people out there that are pushing this agenda. You know, to say that we haven't had any changes, and then I can literally list, you know, what I said the other day. Imagine if Mr. Holtus walked into Churchill Downs today and hung up his sign and said, I'm going to conduct business. Just imagine, in the short time that he's passed away, he's a lifetime horseman, to be told, okay, and we're not mad at these rules, but just to say that there's no rules, but imagine this. To work a horse, you have to get a pre-vet examination. Okay, that's fine. To enter a horse and for the horse to be able to run, you have to have a veterinarian come to your barn and jog the horse and check for soundness. Not your opinion, his opinion. There's no such thing as drugs of any kind. Everything they've ever asked for to move out of our industry is left. Everything and stuff that I was happy to see go. You know, no race day medication, that was here in 2006. No anabolic steroids, that was in 2008. No adjunct for bleeders, that was in 2012. You know, no race day therapies of any kind, that was 2 years ago. Now we have to have a signed agreement between our vet and the trainer acknowledging liability. We, you know, no out of competition testing, that's okay, I'm glad to have it. The changes of claiming rules are ever changing. You've got now, if a horse comes back and he is off in any manner that the state vet sees, the claim is void. Love it. It protects horses, and I'm for it. The whip rules have changed. The race day monitoring of vets on the track. And, you know, there's been a lot and lot of changes. I mean, I can go on forever. Biphosphorus, you know, not to mention LASIK, gone. In all two-year-olds, LASIK, gone. Okay, but don't tell me there hasn't been changes, and they all haven't been, at least from somebody else's idea and promoted to benefit the horse. And that's the overall thing. When I put something on social media, that's what I get. Well, you guys have been unwilling to change, and that's why you are where we are, and I'm glad that the federal government's taking over, and if you don't like it, find a new job.
Casey will be editing that segment of the discussion out, because absolutely unbelievably brilliant, and that, you know, that entire breadth, actually, I referenced, you know, the conversations we've had here for 15 years, including RMTC discussions and rope and more, and tons of them have really tried to stress exactly that there's been all kinds of advances, all kinds of things that have been addressed successfully, and yet there's been this constant din that you know, the horsemen are medication reliant and obstructionist, and yet you just laid out literally 15 years worth of things that have morphed and changed and for the better, and yet it seems like this entire structure it has been created over one topic. And that was LASIX, and almost like a punishment for everybody that, well, if you had just agreed to LASIX elimination, you wouldn't, you know, being subject to all of this now. But you brought it on yourselves. That's kind of what's being handed to us.
Well, you know, and it doesn't matter. So for instance, right now, this is the importance of this. Right now, I'm driving. I pull over into a Kroger parking lot to get out and speak to you about it, right? I'm standing outside. I'm sure people think I'm crazy. I'm used to that. But I want there to be change that changes the perception of our sport. But it seems like no matter what we do, the powers that be want control. They don't want change. They want control. And what I want is, you guys are willing to give Miss Lisa Lazarus $1.3 million of your purse money, great. That's fine. Do whatever. $500,000 for the man that is doing the programming. You want to spend $14.6 million to $17 million to regulate a bunch of regulations that's already there when you offer no real meat to anything you're saying? When the questions weren't asked, the questions were asked, they just weren't answered. We'll get back to you. I have to check in on that. I'm okay with that. If you tell me this, Are you gonna ever quit trying to replace horsemanship with regulation? Are you ever gonna look out for the horse primarily instead of your own interest? And at what point do we understand that more regulations doesn't change anything whenever you don't tell me how you're gonna stop the Navarros? You don't tell me how we're gonna, you know, how we're going to come up with a testing that, you know, I said yesterday in a tweet, you know, I was like, hey, guys, how about instead of spending all this money on regulators that know very little about our sport day to day, how about we put an on-site testing laboratory at every racetrack? How about it be mandatory that we have emergency clinics at every racetrack? Let's have pre-race testing. Figure out a way. We got all this money all of a sudden. Figure out a way to do pre-race testing. That way we don't have to defraud the gambler, pay them, and then come back later and rule the horse as a cheater. Let's do things that could really help a horse and help the people keep it clean. Let's don't just pay a bunch of bureaucratic friends of appointees. Just don't do that. Let's just do something that will help our industry and, more importantly, help the horse.
I saw nothing. I went into this open-minded. I have seen nothing that I think helps a horse's health. Just more regulation and more people with not ability to enforce them.
Ron Moquette, unbelievable, as always, just fabulous. Ron, I got to ask you a couple of things. I'm giving everybody a chance to dote on their horses while we've got you. And, in fact, I might as well use you to preview tomorrow's Mystic Lake Derby. You've got Bob LaPenta and Harlow Stables, McLean's Music Colt, stretching out Switzer. And I will withdraw my concerns over his namesake. if the namesake is Barry, and I will let you talk about his chances stretching out to the mile at Canterbury tomorrow.
Well, we've tried a distance before with the horse. This is all experimental, you know. We're not a win percentage-based group. We're trying to develop a horse, and that means we're going to be trying things and hope it works. We've never tried him a route on the turf. When we did try him a route, he ran against We the People. I mean, I think it was a maiden race, We the People. And so it's like maybe he's a little better than we thought at a route. It's just we was made to look inferior because we ran against We the People, and we tried to beat him. We didn't try to run second to him. We actually took it to him. And, you know, so we think that he's going to run well as a turf horse. Having said that, there's some excellent horses on the same vant with us on the way from Churchill and Kentucky to Minnesota. And, you know, I'm happy that the ownership group of Mr. Eric Johnson and Bob LaPenta I said, hey, I want to try this. And they said, you do what you think's best. When the turf system went away at Churchill, we were kind of left, like a lot of people, just disheveled and unprepared. So we started looking around, and that race was on the radar. It's not an A other than, which we're eligible for. But it's a turf race, and it's restricted three-year-olds. So let's see where we're at. Don't be mad at me if it don't work, but don't be surprised if it does.
Switzer, and the Biscuit is going with him, Adam Biskitza, and 10-1 on the line. For those of you that haven't looked yet, and we're going to discuss it in a little bit here with Kevin Gorg, we're going to handicap. It sure feels like the red-hot Foley Barn is dangerous here with Stitched, 5-2.
Yeah, I'm just glad it wasn't his Arkansas bread. But good horses in the race. Anytime you look up and see some of these guys and gals that's running, you better be prepared. You know, we've got some other horses doing good things. I was very proud of Osborne. Sunday again brought it. We was a neck short. We got beat by a horse that was in the Kentucky Derby in the Preakness his last two races, so he had a little back class.
But Happy Jack.
I think he's all right. But we run our eyeballs out, and that's all you can ask for is a horse to run as best he can. And he represented us well and come back happy. So at the end of the day, I wanted to win, but we'll take that 20% and we'll recoup and find another one of these purses somewhere and see if we can get it there. And then we've got some, you know, babies. I'm not as proficient as Wesley Ward at getting them to the races before July. So, you know, he's great at that, but I am just trying to develop my horses and get them a little bit later, and they're coming, and I'm so happy with the people that have allowed me to buy a horse this year. The last 2 years have been down for me because of obvious reasons, and for people that stuck with me and stuff, they will be rewarded this year. So I'm not Babe Ruth and pointing to the left field. I'm just telling you, I'm very proud. If the racing gods stick with me, we've got the right kind of horses to have some fun down the road.
Nice. I've got to ask, because our friend Karen, she's asking me to ask you about Trident Hit, who won earlier in the year, and this is that Tis Now four-year-old, has run some nice races. Looks like he's a little bit, is he sidelined a little?
Yeah, we sidelined him at he didn't care for Churchill that much. He come out of it with a little bugaboo. We decided to don't risk anything. Let's stop. And he's always been a very sound horse for us. And the partnership of that are unbelievable. When I said let's stop and give him a shot to recuperate and be 100%, there wasn't a question. It was like, let's do right by the horse. So they will be rewarded. He's a cool horse, classy. I think we made 350 with him so far. And, you know, and we also, we have his little brother coming up. So that'll be interesting. He's by Midnight Storm, and he has a lot of the same characteristics, but he's got some big shoes to fill because Trident's been very consistent and very honest, and you know, we're expecting that from little brother.
Interesting. The dam, Don't Get In My Way, that dropped this pair. And I'm just pulling up. Let me see, Ron. This has been such a nice family. There's no name yet on this baby.
No, he's just chilling. You know, he's a two-turn horse. He thinks he wants to run now, but I know he's still laying down bone you know, my job is to have try to make a really great 3-year-old, not a really good 2-year-old. So I'm taking that into consideration, and I'm rebuking him on wanting to go early. So we're just growing right now. He's hits the ground great. He's got a ride.
Well, and this is the family that produced the dam, actually, go back of 10 years, Miss Machiavelli and Dorset. Dorset was very nice, the Artie Schiller, and won the Mystic Lake Derby himself, as it happens. It's kind of funny that you've got this family, and you've got a sibling. Did you realize that there was a sibling that had that you'd have, you know, that was a Mystic Lake Derby winner?
I did not know. I just, at the end of a shank, I thought this is a beautiful horse and I might be able to get him for the right price. And
wow.
So I was happy.
Pretty funny.
I do know the pedigrees of most of them. The one filly that I'm very excited about is a half sister to Overtax that won the allowance race here, I think a week ago. That was a $127,000 allowance, and we bought the sister before he won that, thank goodness, because it would have been out of our price range.
How about that?
She's a runner. You know, I think, we're going to need some luck, you know, as everybody does. But if she continues to mature like she is right now, we're going to have some fun because she's got his athleticism and his mindset, and maybe even a little bit more ability.
Well, all right. Well, Ron, looking forward to catching up down the road with you. And this was great. I appreciate, as always, you know, just how, you know, the plain speaking delivery that you offer on these topics. Ron Moquette, everybody, and you can follow Moquette Racing. Or you can follow Ron Moquette himself. Ronnie, get lucky tomorrow night, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
No, my absolute pleasure, and we are going to absolutely cut that segment out, what Ron just that was unbelievable. Chuck Simon is going to bring this all home, and the series of horsemen, because Chuck has essentially – you know, laid out any number of these topics that we've hit on with Jason Barkley, Michelle Lovell, Mike Tomlinson, Ron Moquette, and then some other topics too that that Chuck has expressed concerns and, you know, has been really sounding, well, he's been sounding the alarm about a lot of these topics for ages. But I kind of wanted, you know, with Jason presenting the HBPA, the Kentucky HBPA overview, and then the individual points that have been delivered. We'll have Chuck now, and he'll, you know, kind of bring them all home. So let's get Chuck in, and then we'll take our second break. We'll come back. We've got a lot to do in the last hour. Got to get Dick Powell for a quick hit as well. Of course, I promised Kevin Gorg we're going to get some handicapping with Kevin, and then visits with Brad Cox and Todd Pletcher. So a lot to do in hour three. So, Chuck, it's going to be tough. This is a big assignment for Chuck to hit the points as quickly as possible. And he says he's ready. All right. He sent me a text. He said he's ready to pop. Chuck Simon, good morning.
Steven, how are you?
I'm good. Chuck, obviously, you know, there's so many things that have come up here in an hour and whatever it's been, an hour and 40 minutes with the horsemen that were at the meeting yesterday. And, of course, you involved with the Florida horsemen down there and have seen the THA presentations of HISA and the registration process and some of the Q&As. You've brought up even other topics of concern, areas of concern, besides what we've heard this morning. So kind of, bring us home here and tie together what you heard from Jason and Michelle and Ron and Mike, and then fold in your own top concerns about the way this thing is being administered with, 10 days?
Well, I think you did a great job of getting voices that are respected from, people that are trainers that are respected that aren't those that just are spouting off all the time, like me. And I think that helps people understand the common trainer, the regular guy, is very, very concerned about their livelihood, and they should be. You have to consider that, we get this thrown in our face here a lot. This is a federal law. Well, that's great. You should be held to a much higher standard than you're currently holding yourself to, because this seems debacle-ish at this point. I don't know Lisa Lazarus, I don't know Lisa Leslie either, but I've been, it's been explained to me that she's very capable and she's very smart, but she also joined this party in February. This bill passed, not December, the previous December. It took them 14 months to bring someone in, and you had the issue with the USADA dropping out, and this thing is not ready to go, and it's very plain. If you're 10 days away from a government program being implemented, then answers should be had for all. Yes, there's always a possible question that no one might have thought of, but from the beginning, horsemen were cut out, and it was intentional. The hoops that the people that fill these boards had to jump through in having zero connection to the industry. This is a very difficult business to educate yourself on. There's no classes to educate yourself on. There's no textbooks. There's very little actual independent media anymore. And things have changed a tremendous amount in a short period of time, including all the things that Ron had pointed out. Michelle pointed out the lack of clarity. Mike pointed out some of the technical aspects, like not being able to three-quarter a racehorse's shoe, which is, it's lunacy. Not to try to explain it, but it's just that is not a safety issue at all, ever, under any circumstances. I mean, when you go to the safety issues in general, some of the things that HISA doesn't cover, make this distinction. What is more dangerous on the racetrack than riders hurting or using the whips seven times instead of six? It's not even close. It's not even close. But they're not covering that. They're not covering rules. If you ask all the participants, owners, trainers, breeders, bettors especially, what would you like to see standardized more than anything? The on-track race rules. The stewards' decisions. Those are mind-bogglingly different from place to place. And I know that we have the ROT, whatever they call it, but that's one tenth of what it should be. There's only $12 billion bet on this sport, but that's not covered, and that's not going to be covered. Medication rules. No one is going to know or see any difference. I can guarantee you that, because every time we've changed medication rules,
you didn't see any difference.
Nope.
You really didn't, and you're not going to. The people inside the business don't see it because it's not what it's made out to be. So, yeah, you could do this and you could do that, but people aren't going to tangibly see that. That's a big issue that's going to happen. People, like I said, are naturally distrustful of the government in these days. I mean, turn on any news channel and you're going to see strife, and the government, whatever side you're on, is going to be in the middle of it. So when you tell me, well, just sign this and, you know, we're not intending to carry it out like the letter of the law says. We were in Florida, and Florida doesn't even have a real racing commission. We're governed in Florida by the Department of Business Regulation that has 38 different bureaus. The person who came into charge a few years ago of the Department of Regulation, or Business Regulation, was a younger lawyer, potshot guy out of Yale or one of those fancy colleges that had political aspirations. This was a resume builder, and he was a law and order guy. He came in, and every rule had to be followed to the exact key. Well, all of a sudden, you have to get relicensed. Owners that had been licensed for 20 years have to go back and try to get documentation from issues that happened 30 years ago. I had an owner that had to hire a lawyer because he had a DUI 30 years ago, when he was like 19. And they told him he could not be licensed until he gave documentation showing that that case had been adjudicated, right? He said, well, what about my driver's license for the last 30 years? But he went to try to get that from the town that happened, and they didn't have those records. They laughed. They said, those records, we got rid of that 20 years ago. Like, we don't have it. He had to actually hire a lawyer just to get licensed. So the idea that the people here are saying, well, that's not how we're going to, you know, we're going to interpret this. Well, what about the next guy? Because these people aren't going to be here forever. And that's a scary issue. Just in general, it's an industry thing. We should all be on the same side. Why is there, you know, why is there lines drawn? Everyone should be together, but that's this industry. There's no leadership in it. And it's, do as I say, not as I do. And a lot of it is based on nonsense and propaganda. And, you know, jockey whip rules, whatever, fine. It seems like after last year, this year, we've hardly heard a peep about that. I mean, that's not even hardly a topic. No one comments about us to me after one of our shows or anything. I mean, there's very little talk about it. It was like a settled thing. Like, we'd come to a place where it seemed like, you know, the rules were working and everybody was relatively satisfied. And all of a sudden, you know, they're not even adopting the rules that the jockeys who are currently riding under prefer. And Johnny V gets, you know, the one person on the panels that actually is involved in the industry gets run over. I mean, it's just, how can you not be distrustful? But on the other hand, I mean, last week on the show, and my show, or Big Monday show, my podcast, Going in Circles, check it out, at your podcast host, I said, if you want to participate in this horse and you want horses, you got to sign up. And like, do you agree with all this stuff? No. Do I think that they're going to be raiding people's houses? No. But it just isn't really ready to be. I mean, this is, the FTC should be embarrassed. This is under their umbrella. You can't have an operation where 40-50% of the questions don't have answers a week and a half out. And that's where we're at. Like, what is, you know, the purpose of doing this, of disrupting this business? People don't have skin in the game. And that's always a factor, and like I said, we could talk about so many other things. The out of competition testing seems wildly, you know, that USADA thing, it seems wildly overserved. I mean, you know, we all know there's people that might be pushing the edge. Pay attention to them. You know what most of my horses do when they get turned out? I'm going to write down here. Here's what they do on a daily day, daily schedule. Monday, ran around the field. Tuesday, ran around the field. Wednesday, ran around the field. Thursday, ran around the field.
I mean, it's just nuts. So, you know, on another day, I know you're short for time, and, you know, we can talk about some of the particulars, but the real big thing is the expense. And that's kind of, to me, something that's really looming, because in the end, I mean, in this world, everything is expense. It's all about how much this is going to cost. And that has been shrouded in secrecy from day one. The method, you know, we used to hear, oh, we're definitely not raising takeout or putting a surcharge on. But that is not the words that are spoken anymore. We don't think we're going to do that, or we're not trying to do that. So that was one of the themes of our show last night, was this affects all of you. If you're involved in horse racing and you have some, you know, more than a passing interest, this is going to affect your participation, even if you're just a bettor. And that's why it's important.
Well, and when it comes to that topic, all the prior incantations had language that that included that takeout could not be used, increases of takeout could not be used to fund this. And then in the last version, we banged that drum nonstop, and you know, for people to get out in front of it, but you know, too late for that. It was slapped onto that omnibus bill, and now it's on the doorstep, and the cow not only is out of the barn, the cow's been served up, you know, into quarter pounders. Well, Chuck, I wanted you to kind of tie all these things together, because you've talked on these issues. You know, we've had so many conversations over the years, and they all kind of harmonize together. Even things that are not directly tied to HISA and to the administration of these rules. And before we go, and you know, Chuck, as Chuck mentioned on his Going in Circles pod. A lot of this was discussed yesterday, so listen to that for other, you know, for other areas of concern and other specifics. But you know, you've read each version of the rules as they've been posted on the website, Chuck, and I've had Alan Foreman talk about the legalities of those rules. I thought it was ill-advised for Lisa Lazarus to you know, bludgeon the horseman yesterday for not being aware of you know, of every aspect of those rules. But how taxing and how difficult is it to understand what is on that set of rules as written and approved by the FTC?
Steve, the people making the rules work in offices. They wear suits to work. They work in laboratories. And they're making rules for people who work in barns, whose offices have dirt floors. And I think the disconnect is so great that they don't understand, and they don't have any interest in understanding. And that's what really seems to be the one theme that's troublesome for me, is if they asked me to come and sit in the room in the corner and take notes and give them at the end of the day and not speak and not say a single word, if they fed me, I would do that for free. You know, I could help them. I'm not actually wanting to do that, but I mean, I would. There are other people that could, you know, I've avoided many of these issues just because they would say, well, geez, you know, I don't know where you guys are getting this, but I just don't know how you make rules for people in a position, in an industry, in a job that you have never participated in, if none of the people have ever actually done it. That's just it's I've said it before. I watched football since I was 5 years old. But if you put me in charge of changing the NFL rule book, well, hell, I'd bring players in and coaches and referees and we'd have a big conference and try to figure out what's the best way of doing it. In the end, we should be looking for the best rule. And that's something I've said for 20 years. Why does no one ever say we need the best rules? It's always we need the strictest, we need the most you know, foolproof, we need this, we need a deterrent, we need about. We just need the best rules, and we never, ever, ever get them. And that's across the board. That's not just this. That's not just medication. That's just on the track stuff. That's in the better the rules we have of concerning late scratches and all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's look at the Category 1 rules. I mean, you have the guy in England cutting half the field off, and then afterwards they say, "Oh, you got 10 days." You go, "Oh, I'll go on a holiday."
Yeah, exactly. Chuck, this was fabulous as always. Thank you. No, you bring up a great point about that, because actually, if we're going to do this, if this was going to be executed, then shouldn't we have worked to fix, countless aspects? And maybe there's still time. Maybe there's time, over a period to address areas that are, poorly, currently administered, but we'll have to see. Let's get through. Let's see about getting through the first portion of this. Cannon Shell, of course, on your Twitter dial, Chuck Simon, and Chuck will be on hand at Saratoga this summer, and you can take him out for dinner, and he'll entertain your party, tell great stories about the horses and Saratoga and harness and you name it, right? You're available for parties, like a.
I am available for parties. Actually, I'm alive in the double at Oak Grove right now. I need Komodo.
Nice.
Really bad. They're running in the middle of the morning because it's like Sahara Desert hot in Kentucky. So
exactly.
But I shall be around. So we will. Maybe we'll dedicate a day to do another show on this and kind of go into some of the details, and because there's a million different ways that things can go, and we'll talk about it then.
Nope. You got it. Going in circles. Chuck Simon, everybody. Thanks, Chuck.
You got it.
Let's take a break. Our last of the morning. We've got 45 minutes, and we got a ton to do. We've got to get Kevin Gorg. I got to get in first, and we're going to look at the Canterbury action. I want to go through the stakes with Kevin, and we got Brad Cox. We've got Todd Pletcher, and I got to get Dick Powell. Dick is not going to be available the rest of the week, so I want to get Dick's season-ending thoughts about the HKJC season, and Popo. I think Popo will do some form to win handicapping tomorrow with Popo. All right? Back after this, the last 45.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide.